Do you like to be the first? Name of your sex tape? Well, if you like to be the first to listen to podcasts, you might want to check out our Patreon, because now we're offering a brand new membership tier called Name of Your Sex Tape. I couldn't help it, guys. I'm sorry. For £5 a month, you'll get an ad-free version of our weekly episode on a Tuesday, a full day earlier than its usual release. So you can be the very first to talk about how funny our guest was, how quickly you cracked the case, or how badly I answered a question. Plus, you'll get all the benefits of our regular tier, including our live Zoom records, a special shout out on the podcast, and if you really like to hear us talk, we've got an entire back catalog of extra content. Check it out on patreon.com/drunkwomensolvingcrime.
Name of your sex tape. Name of your sex tape.
Name of your sex tape.
Fancy coming along to see Drunk Women Solving Crime live?
Ooh, yes, please.
Why not join us for our monthly London residency at the marvellous Museum of Comedy? We've got monthly shows through to June.
Plus, every show is a double header, so you get to see us record not one, but two episodes with two fantastic guests.
You can find tickets on our website, drunkwomensolvingcrime.com.
Shows are selling out fast, so be quick.
Noice.
Noice.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
The Drunk Women will be downing Prosecco at this year's Edinburgh Fringe. You can see them from the 3rd to the 11th of August, inclusive, 7:20pm at the Underbelly, Bristow Square. Tickets are now on sale at underbellyedinburgh.co.uk.
Drunk Women Solving.
This is Drunk Women Solving Crime. My name's Taylor Glenn, and I'm a writer and comedian. I'm joined by screenwriter Hannah George.
Hello.
As well as author and comedian Katie Wilkins.
Hello.
This is where beer meets breaking and entering, Prosecco meets perjury, and vodka meets vandalism. It's a true crime podcast with a twist of lime. Coming up on Drunk Women Solving Crime.
I don't like it.
I don't like it either.
It's weird because I really like it. And I brought some Ferrero Rocher as a present in case they didn't murder me.
Shit, wait, Mussolini steal the children?
What I'm saying is, fuck the police. Yeah. No.
Now it's time for Drunk Women Solving Crime.
Okay. What a start. Yeah. Okay. We are Drunk Women. Yes. This is a second recording, and it is my pleasure to introduce our guest for this episode. It is none other than the QI Elf and host of the smash hit podcast, No Such Thing as a Fist.
Fist!
Good luck pronouncing my surname if you can't pronounce fish.
Oh. It is Anna Jasinski.
Hello, that was actually very good.
Yes. Well done. It's this combination of sh and sh, isn't it? It's like Jasinski.
Oh, some people say Jasinski. Like,
what do you say? Because you're the most important one.
Well, I say Tashinsky. Dan Schreiber, who hosts our podcast, says Jasinski, which is a mispronunciation.
Oh, fuck, but... I took Dan Schreiber's pronunciation. Fuck
never
you,
do
Dan.
That.
I mean, I love you. You guys are great. You guys are great. That was funny. Atrocious.
It was glorious.
I liked it.
Yeah.
They should make you say it each time. Like, even when he introduces you, like,
yeah,
I got
but,
this.
Like, how insulting is that? That he got bothered to remember.
It's true. It's true. Let's do this. So, obviously, you are used to doing a podcast and being surrounded by people who know a lot of stuff. So, this should be very refreshing.
She's a little laid back approach to knowledge and information and facts.
So. I had a fax machine when I was a kid.
Oh God, it's that level. Okay. It says,
no, I mean, we try to heighten it. Sometimes I'll put it this way. Like I've listened to your most recent episode, which I really enjoyed, but I was like, what was my main takeaway? Cause oh my gosh, listening to No Such Thing as a Fist, you can just, it's great. Like you just top up your fun facts for your next like get together. Like, you know what I know, guess what? And it's so great. But yeah. I was like, the main thing I remembered was like, wow, Newton called constipation being cheated a shit. Like that was my favorite.
Being cheated a shit.
But there was so much else on the episode, but I'm like, that's what I'm taking is the constipation.
See, I've actually forgotten that already. Which is not good because that would have been 2 weeks ago we did that. We drink in our podcast as well. Yay! It's not a recipe for remembering.
Give you constipation.
So, Anna,
quite the reverse.
And I knew there was a high probability of mispronouncing your surname, for which I apologize profusely. I didn't know I'd mispronounce fish as well, but anything can happen here. Can you kick us off properly by telling us, have you ever been the victim of a crime?
Well, it was actually really good what happened to me, because I think you invited me on this about a month ago, and you said, think of a crime you've been a victim of. And I couldn't think of anything, and then in the intervening month, I was robbed.
No, oh, no!
But actually quite useful for these purposes.
So that happened to you.
So pleased.
I was so relieved. As soon as it happened, I thought, yes, I'll have something to say. It wasn't very exciting. I was in a pub in Finsbury Park. I won't name it in case it goes out of business. But I was actually having a conversation about how I was a bit annoyed that the pub had gone from being, it used to be just quite old school and basic and very cheap, which is my main, what draws me to a pub. Yeah. Well, so
And I didn't even say hello to you guys. Hi, no, Katie. Yeah, we don't need to. Yeah, okay. Whatever. Fuck it.
And say hello. Action.
So I was in this pub with my friends, and I was saying it's disappointing that it's kind of tried to gentrify, but hasn't really worked. So okay. It's just like way more expensive. It's a bad atmosphere. And as I was saying, what a shame it's not, you know, as scummy as it used to be. Someone was going to my bag and taking my wallet.
No.
Which was a pain, and I realised when I got on the bus and tried to pay with my card and couldn't. But there was quite a cool thing happened where, so my wallet was gone, and I actually don't, you know, these days you can just kind of cancel your cards, and it's also, I wanted to do a bit of detective work because I went online the next day and I could see they were really, obviously really kind of humble robbers. They didn't have like big ideas. They went to the news agents opposite and they spent like £15 on one of my cards and £12 on another in the news agents opposite this pub, and then I cancelled them. They didn't even max it out.
Oh, what the hell?
At least max out, go to the £30.
Yeah, it's a dream.
It's a dream. You poor people. But then I got this email a couple of days later saying, I got your email from something inside a wallet I found in our garden.
Oh, wow.
Do you want to come get it?
Oh, my God.
Yeah, quite exciting. So then I replied, and I was really effusive and like, my God, thank you so much. You're my savior. This is the best moment of my life. And they said there's nothing left in it, really. Yeah. They've taken all the cards out and stuff.
How did they know it was yours?
Well, that's a good question. I found out later it was because I had like an Uber receipt in there, which had my email on it.
Okay. Oh, my goodness.
But at the time, I was thinking, oh, that's weird, though. How have they got my details?
Yeah.
And then they looked, I don't know. And then...
And how far away were they from you?
Well, they were like right near Finsbury Park, they said. So they gave me an address. But the email tone was quite weird.
Okay.
It was quite like very abrupt. And I was really excited when I replied. And they just went, don't come after 9 p.m. What is going on?
What happens after 9 p.m.?
It's very bizarre. They turn into a pumpkin or I don't know.
Burn the witches. It's 9 p.m.
Oh my God.
We start our sick rituals then. So please don't arrive. But then, so I thought, that's fine. They sound weird, but I'll go and get it.
I would bring like 10 friends with me.
Would you? Okay. Would you be paranoid? Okay.
Giant friends.
Because it's in quite a weird like back street in the part of Finsbury Park that they've... Anyway, well, I went to see a friend of mine before I went to pick it up, who... And I was picking it up right on the cusp at 8:45. I was like, if I can get a preview of what's happening at 9, I will. And so I went to see a friend of mine who's quite an elderly man and a very lonely man, and that equates to, for him, I know it is sad, but it does also mean that his head is conspiracy theories. So I told him about this. Ooh. And by the time I left his house, he had me convinced that it was definitely an axe murderer who was like gonna need to chop off all my fingers so they had my fingerprints so they could steal my identity, and then I'd be locked in a cellar. And you know, I was like, maybe I should do something. So I called my partner and said, do you mind if I put you in speakerphone when I go to this house and just have you in my breast pocket so you can hear?
Yeah.
Smart, right?
I like your sleuthy brain.
Thank you. Yeah. Although then he said, so if something does happen, like you scream or something, what should I do? And then...
Say goodbye! I just want a goodbye.
Just I love you, bye. I'll never forget you.
Goodbye. He could just sing you into your death.
I think that would be nice.
Put the mortgage in your name.
So I didn't think the plan right through to the end, but I had them in my breast pocket on speakerphone.
I think that's slick. Regardless of possible tragic outcome, that's a good plan. Yeah.
And at least he gets to hear my last words as well. I think it's nice.
Yes.
But they were nothing to do with him.
Listen probably...
to my podcast.
No such thing as a fish forever. Or fist. Rename no such thing as a fish, no such thing as a fist. So then I knocked on the door, and the person who answered was a woman who I would guess was 112, 113.
That's 9 p.m. is like
bedtime.
The witching hour, but it's not the burning witching hour. It's night-night.
It's night-night for her. She was about 4 foot tall. And I realized that...
She probably used the email on her local library.
Exactly. And I was like, I think like old people, they take so long to type an email. That's probably why she can't be doing with the niceties the OMG, so excited to meet you.
Whoa.
Yeah, exactly. It's taken her an hour to type that one sentence. And so she answered, and I brought some Ferrero Rocher as a present in case they didn't murder me. But I kept it in my bag because I thought, I don't want to turn up with the Rocher and then it's a murderer and they get the chocolates.
They get the free chocolate.
And such a nice chocolate.
Well, exactly.
You are ambassador.
I'm not letting that happen. But then it's kind of awkward because I got the Rocher
nothing
out.
Says, in case I don't get murdered, like the smooth hazelnut goodness.
You could advertise for them, I think.
They could be our sponsors.
Oh, that makes me so happy. So great.
But could she eat it? I sort of handed them to her.
But it turns out she couldn't chew those.
Well, I looked at her and she looked at me, and it was an awkward moment where we both met, our eyes met, and we were like, you can't eat these, can you? I don't know. I just don't know if dentures can handle that level of nut.
It's a lot of nut. It's a lot of it's full circle nut.
Yeah, it is.
Wowzers. So
anyway, that's this.
So
I got
you
my
got
wallet
your
back.
Wallet with gutted wallet gutted. With your email in it, which is useful for you.
Guys, can I just say right now, there's going to be a lot of listeners right now that are going, we've got a lonely old man. We've got a lonely old woman. Why the fuck did you not get them together?
Oh, well, I have her email address.
Get them together. Oh,
should
my God.
Should I set it up?
Who's the lonely old man?
My friend. The lonely old man.
Oh, that
one.
Sorry. I was like, this is Anna. Oh, she's right there.
It's actually kind of insulting. I know I didn't do my hair today, but wow.
What a way to treat our guest.
No, I thought you thought that the old lady was the old man. And
no,
I get
there
it.
Was the one that I see. Mentioned old man.
This is why I don't set people up. I'm very confused.
That's a great idea.
Yeah.
I'm gonna do, and they'd have such a good origin story because he could say, I thought you were an axe murderer. First I heard of you.
Yeah.
A tale as old as time.
Yeah. Hi, I'm paranoid. Hi, I go to sleep at 8:30. Let's hang out.
made for man. Each other.
Can't believe how romantic this podcast is.
So we often ask on this podcast if you had the perpetrator here, so whoever stole that wallet and used it without maxing out the cards, what would you say to them today?
I think I would say, guys, the contactless limit is £30. Do it. Do it. There must have been £30 worth of stuff in that newsagent's. I understand it was probably shit, but get it anyway. And then I would say, I mean, well done, because my bag was right behind me. And I'm, so, you know, to get that hand inside that rucksack, right. We put out. But I wouldn't really say well done. I'm not actually condoning stealing stuff.
Why not take the whole rucksack?
Yeah, that's a good question. Maybe it's harder to conceal.
I mean,
conceal.
That's just...
They didn't need the whole rucksack. They just wanted the wallet.
That's an extra moment that I feel like... I mean, I've never stolen someone's wallet, but I feel like take the whole thing. Yeah. Be quick. Get out of there.
You won't notice quite as quickly. You didn't notice until you got on the bus.
Oh, right, yeah, so right, right.
That's okay. A really good point, yeah.
I remember I had my card cloned
that
once.
Is a good point.
Like, so I used a dodgy ATM. Mm-hmm. And, like, a couple of weeks later, I got a call from my bank, and they were like... we've got a thing on your account that said that you spent like £64 on Waitrose. We don't think this is you, babe.
Literally, they said, like, babe.
They said this isn't you.
Our customer service, babes. What's going on?
It was so funny though. I was like, how the fuck? Like,
you okay, hun?
They literally called me up and they were like, is this you? And mm-hmm. I was like, I wanted to say yes, but it wasn't. Someone had cloned my card.
Wow. Did it? And your pride didn't make you say, actually, yeah. I've got a bit of a pay rise, and Waitrose is my new supermarket.
Yeah, motherfuckers, I could shop here.
Yeah, pretty well for old Hannah George. They weren't, and I had to cancel my card immediately, and they gave me the money back as well. Ooh. So it makes me think, if I ever do anything sort of like, you know, buy something fancy, I'm going to get a call from my thing, and I'll be like, that wasn't me. That nice. Wasn't me at all. Yeah. Get the money back.
Yeah. Serves them right for not thinking enough of you and your classy shopping habits.
Fucking Pretty right. Woman, that shit.
Yeah.
Now it's time for drunk women solving crime.
Hey guys, you want to solve some true crime?
Sure do.
Yeah, we do. It.
Okay, this is actually a very well-known case from the US, and someone sent it in to us on Twitter, and I tried to find the tweet and I'm so sorry I couldn't. So if it was you, let us know. Thanks for sending this in. It is the case of the missing Sodder children, and I should let you know that this is a cold case, so we actually do need to solve this.
No
pressure.
No pressure.
Yeah.
Yeah. Just to add a little bit of levity to a missing children case, which is not easy. Every time I would type in Sodder children, autocorrect would change it to the soccer children. And I just thought, well, that's a very different incident in the US, like the soccer children. And then I had this whole script in my head, like, Vanessa, it's Fran Smith. Have you seen Hunter and Riley? I dropped them off at soccer practice and I don't know where they are. I'm afraid they're smoking the pot again. I had a whole
thing. I would 100% thing. Watch that movie.
Would you?
Also, I feel more confident about solving that one.
Yeah, it was definitely the coach.
Right. So this is such an interesting case. I went down such a rabbit hole, different sources, and so many people have talked about it. And strangely enough, it has popped up in the press again recently for some reason. So it's just... Again, no pressure, drunk women.
Proper but cold case.
It's a proper cold case.
And cold means unsolved, right?
Yes.
Just because I'm not experts like you guys yet.
Mate, you're the QI man. You know everything.
QI woman? Come on. There's only one of us. So.
You know what? In my head, I said woman, but with my voice, I said man.
Yeah.
The QI person.
You abbreviated woman.
What I meant was you were the genius intellectual in the room.
Well, that is true. Yes,
normally it's me, which says a lot.
You're the genius. Well, it's a low bar.
Yes, it is.
Okay, our case takes us to Fayetteville, West Virginia, 1945. It's Christmas Eve, and a family called the Sodders are settling in for a cozy night after opening presents. First question, presents on Christmas Eve or Christmas morning?
Christmas morning, motherfuckers.
Yeah.
It's a very sort of German, sort of European thing, isn't it, to do Christmas Eve on, like, my friend who is German, I remember her family, when we were growing up, they would always have it on Christmas Eve, and I was like, have you not got a calendar? What the fuck are you doing?
What do you do on Christmas Day?
You're just people are just like one present on Christmas Eve. Sometimes people are like all the tree presents on Christmas Eve.
It's ridiculous. No. It doesn't, just call it Christmas Day. If you're going to open your presents on Christmas Eve, just move Christmas Day a day earlier.
Yes.
Rename it.
Yeah.
Preach.
And that is the most important question we are going to ask in this case. George and Jenny Sauter lived with 9 of their 10 children in the house. Their eldest son, Joe, was away. Any ideas where?
Wait, what year is it?
1945.
Well, the war.
Very good.
At the very last minute,
which
if they
war?
Were American, yeah.
The very last minute,
1945. I'm going, mum and dad. I'm just gonna. Oh, it's over. Okay, thanks, guys. Bye. We solved it. Cheers. Thanks. Bye. Goodbye. I genuinely am the most intelligent one in this room. Not you now,
really,
but
you really did. But I did that because I was like, wait, Christmas 1945. I'm like, wait, everything was over by then. So he was, literally kind of.
What was he doing? He was just lying, writing it around, like, still going on. Oh, pretty rough there on the front.
I think there was some admin. Like they had to do some admin.
There was a bit of Japanese stuff still happening, I think. So maybe that was his excuse. But
Joe was overseas. That evening, Jenny wakes up to the phone ringing at 12:30 a.m. She answers. She hears a female who asks for a name that Jenny's not familiar with. She also hears glasses clinking and weird laughter in the background. Jenny then checks on her kids, noticing that the lights are on and the curtains are not drawn, which is unusual.
I don't like it.
I don't like it either.
It's weird because I really like it.
I'm glad that we voted. Anna, any like,
deciding
dislike?
Vote is I'm ambivalent, but I do think a crime's about to happen.
Yeah. Okay.
If it's not, it's just a lovely Christmas or something. Do you know what I mean? It's like
it's just a happy Christmas story. What is weird laughter?
Yeah, that's
when
a good
they had
question.
Weird laughter. What is the difference between weird laughter? That?
Yeah.
The foghorn. Yeah, I think it's that.
Like sinister laugh, like
So what was unusual is that usually the kids knew to turn out the lights, draw the curtains. One of her children, Marion, was actually asleep on the couch, and she assumes that the rest of the children had simply forgotten to turn off the lights before bed. They're excited, it's Christmas Eve. She assumes that they're up in the attic asleep. She's awoken again around 1 a.m. by a loud bang and a rolling noise. She goes back to sleep. Can we talk about 1945 parenting versus now? Because I was trying to put myself in her shoes, which was uncomfortable because I was like, 10 kids, oh my God. but like by now, like I would have my husband up. I'd be like, I heard a rolling noise in a bang. I'd have a bowl of cereal just like to comfort eat. Like stuff would be going on.
Do you think you'd do the cereal before you went to check on the kids?
Yes.
The cereal first.
Just so I was calm. Like I'd need to diffuse the anxiety with...
Totally understandable.
Some cornflakes.
Is that calming? Do you put gin on your cornflakes?
Oh, I find carbs so calming, but that's a whole different podcast.
Okay.
It's called Taylor Glenn Comfort Eats. Okay, tune in. What wakes her up next? She falls back asleep because she doesn't hear anything else. She hears this rolling sound and a bang, a loud bang and then a rolling noise. Falls back asleep. What wakes her up next?
Is it Santa? I'm just desperate to see the positive in all of this.
You are right to try and find positives because this feels dark.
It does feel dark. I guess, is it another bang?
It's not a sound.
A car engine.
Is it dawn? The light of dawn.
A cockerel.
It's the smell of something.
Oh.
Fire.
Mm-hmm.
Chestnuts roasting on.
Hannah George will do anything to rescue Christmas.
My kids wake up all the time at night and I'm like, oh, like I should run in and check them, but I do this all the time and then I can't get back to sleep for 2 hours and I should just assume they're probably just coughing and it's fine. And now I'm going to be like, okay, I'll definitely run in, even though it means I'll be awake for 2 hours. They're probably fine, right?
I'm so sorry.
Maybe they are fine.
That's on me.
Yeah, maybe they are
We don't
fine.
Know yet.
She smells smoke. And she checks George's office, her husband's office, and finds there is a fire. This also happens to be where the fuse box and telephone wires are located. So George and Jenny escape with some of their children. How many do they make it out with?
I'm glad that wasn't a number that they decided. We've got some of our children. How many should we go for? Should we try for half?
This feels like a game show. Go back in, get that one.
Yeah.
I think it's not many. Maybe, should we go half?
I think half. Five?
Five.
Okay. That's half of 10,
I'm going
right?
to go six or seven.
It's four.
Ooh. Oh, for fuck's sake, Jenny and George.
They must try harder. They escape with the youngest four. It's Marion, Sylvia, John, and George Jr. The other five were sleeping in the attic, and they can't be reached because the staircase is on fire.
This is awful.
This is horrible.
Yeah, it's true crime,
even
guys.
Why are you telling us about this?
It's a really fascinating case. Just bear with me.
Okay.
Yeah, good, because I'm switching really
channels.
Upset.
Switching channels to the carb one.
So they try to call for help, but their phone isn't working, so they use a neighbor's phone. They also try to get the children in the attic from the outside, but they're unable to get to them. Why is this?
They can't get a ladder high enough?
Mm-hmm. Why not?
Because their neighbors are jerks that don't have ladders?
No.
The house is but 15 close. Stories.
It has to do with a ladder.
The ladder's been set on fire or stolen.
The ladder is missing.
This is a deliberate job setup.
The ladder isn't in its usual spot against the house, so they're unable to climb up. So desperately, George tries to break back into the house. He breaks a window and he cuts himself. He's bleeding badly, but he can't see through the smoke, so he has to get back outside.
Oh my God, someone tried to kill the four oldest children.
No, but it's called the missing sort of children. So they've taken the children and they've tried to, like, surely, like, if it's the missing children, you're not missing if you're definitely, continue,
it's
Taylor.
It's just the time for when people start looking.
Ooh. George tries to use both of his trucks. He owns two trucks. He tries to drive them against the house and use them to climb up the side into the attic. Okay. This doesn't work. How come?
Because it's not high enough.
No, did he put one on top of the other?
Is that... Oh, George.
What are you trying?
Monster truck rally. This is no time. This is no time for that.
What a good dad. I'm so sorry, George.
Why can't he? Yeah, it's not tall enough.
No.
Truck's gone?
He can't even get that far because...
Because the fire.
Key's gone.
Close.
Oh, are the tires down?
Close. He cannot start the trucks. Oh, he tries one and it won't start. He tries the other one, it won't start.
Oh, they've cut the engine.
Oh God!
Wires.
Someone's really
this
fucking done
sabotage.
A number on this family. Fucking hell!
Now the fire department have been called. What time? So this is about 1-2 a.m. in the morning. What time do you think the fire department finally show up?
3 a.m.
Yeah, 3:30.
Any advances?
Oh, it sounds like it's going to be like 4 a.m., 5?
8 a.m.
What? Do they know about fire and how quickly it does stuff?
Do they it's really? 1945. We're not sure about science.
Do they hate this family or someone in on this?
Well, there are a lot of theories as to why the fire department took a long time. One of the basic things is just that this is a tiny town. Most of them are volunteers. It's Christmas Eve, so not many people are available.
Everyone's drunk.
And a lot of the fire department had been, they were overseas, so they're
yeah,
you right. know, it's old people and kids troop, and drunk people.
It. Yeah,
it's which one of them do you go for? If one of them has to drive a fire engine,
right?
Maybe the kids.
But keep that thought in mind.
Kids love fire engines, don't they? Kids love them.
Yeah,
this is part of the question around this case, though, is how long it took them to get there, and are these excuses enough to justify a six or seven hour delay in them showing up. So by this time, the house has burned down. It was a timber home. So when it went up very quickly, and the Sauter family assumed that their five children have died in this fire. Oh. The fire department and the state police both conclude the same, saying that it was an electrical fire. Detectives. There are several unusual things about the scene, which cast suspicion on this theory that it was an electrical fire and that the children died. Can you guess some of the theories or sorry, some of the details of the crime scene that would suggest that maybe it wasn't that straightforward.
So they're saying it's an electrical fire, and there's doubt that it was an electrical fire.
There's doubt that it was an electrical fire. There's doubt that the children died in the fire.
What would an electrical fire be caused by then?
What, lack of bodies?
Bingo. Ooh. What would you expect to find in the ashes of the fire?
Bodies.
Mm-hmm. At least bones. You would at least expect to see the bones, but there are no remains.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's,
absolutely no remains.
Kidnapping.
Yeah. So it's speculated that the fire department argue, no, they've just been burned to ash. It went on long enough that there is no evidence here. But Jenny notices that there are kitchen appliances that are still intact. And so in her head, she's thinking, how is it possible that the fire was hot enough that it burned it down to ash, but I can still see my toaster? Doesn't make any sense.
Go, Jenny.
We've got the ladder that had been moved from its spot. It had actually been thrown into a ravine.
Oh, wow.
And also, what would you expect if there's an electrical fire?
Like kind of lightning striking kind of damage.
Mm-hmm. You would see damage around the electrical wiring.
Yeah, some melted wires.
Some burning around the plug points and stuff. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Well, also, what do we see around Christmas time?
Christmas lights.
Christmas lights.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
And were they still intact? That's a terrible image.
They were still on.
What? Oh, that's dark.
While the fire was burning.
Nothing burnt out.
Nothing burnt out. And if it had been an electrical fire, you would expect that all
a
the lights...
A big surge that would have killed everything.
You'd expect that the lights would go up. But they all reported that they stood outside
who
and could see...
Who stole these children? Do we have suspects?
We do.
No, who manufactured these Christmas lights? That's incredible.
That's the important question. And why don't they exist anymore?
Yeah, I have to turn every single little fucker if, like, if one doesn't work. You don't
We'd
get...
like to thank our sponsors, Argos. So there are some other crazy details. George's truck not starting. And then there are some accounts that just make this story even crazier. It was discovered by a telephone technician later that somebody had actually climbed up the telephone pole and cut the phone line, which is why they couldn't use their own phone.
Right.
Someone who was arrested later in the case confessed to cutting the telephone pole, admitting that they'd stolen something nearby, but it had absolutely no connection to the theft. There was no justification as to why he would cut the phone lines, but it was written off as, no, somebody confessed to it. Jenny Sauter was so convinced that this theory about the fire was a lie that she started conducting her own experiments. After this happened, she tried to burn animal bones to ash, and she was unable to do so. She contacted a crematorium who told her that a two-hour fire at 2,000 degrees Fahrenheit would be required to burn bones down to ash. And he said that there's no way that the fire would reach that level for that.
Yeah, like, I don't work in a crematorium, but I'm pretty sure that you have...
Someone stole her kids.
Right. You guys have decided. That's good to know.
Well, I feel like we've been led down that avenue.
But also, in a really disturbing way, like, who steals kids? Pedophiles. It's not going to be a good ending.
There's no speculation about that, but bear with me. Okay. There was another account. The driver of a bus that passed through Fayetteville late on Christmas Eve said that he'd seen some people throwing balls of fire, quote-unquote, at the house. A few months later, when the snow had melted, Sylvia, the daughter, had found a small, hard, dark green rubber ball-like object in the brush nearby. And George, recalling his wife's account of the loud thump on the roof and the rolling sound, said that it looked like a pineapple bomb, a hand grenade, or some other incendiary device used in combat. In 1949, the site of the house fire was excavated. They did find some human vertebrae bones, but an expert who analyzed them said that they could only have come from a human aged 16 to 23 and that they had never been exposed to fire. And this is because there's something that happens to the vertebrae that they get fused at a certain age, and the eldest child who was allegedly lost in the fire was 14 years old. Okay. So it was speculated that this had come from... George, the dad, actually bulldozed the site and made a memorial out of it. So it was speculated that the bones had come from a different area in the soil, okay. And then he just bulldozed them over. Because this person also said that they hadn't been exposed to fire. In 1967, Jenny, the mother, would also receive a photo in the post of someone resembling her son, Lewis, with his name written on the back, as well as some other information.
Who would do that?
And George, the dad, also saw a photo of a schoolgirl in Manhattan who resembled their daughter, Betty. He goes to see her, but the family refused to speak to him. Although, in fairness, like, if a dude shows up in your door and they're like, show me Betty, like, you're not. Yeah. It's hard to know exactly what went down.
Yeah, what do you do? Make her wave from an upstairs window, maybe. But did he just give up? I mean, if he thinks his daughter, potentially dead daughter's in there.
Yeah.
They said, no, we're not showing you. And he said, oh, okay, fair enough, and went back home.
Yeah. This is what's interesting about, again, because I went down this rabbit hole of, like, different sources. Let's find out. And it's been spoken about so much. It's sort of finding, like, the information will just trail off. It's like, but what happened next? Yeah. And some of it, I guess, is remembering the time frame and that there's limited police resources and there's limited, you know, they have no way of sort of looking into this. But also, if someone refuses you, like, what do you do?
Yeah.
Do you break into their house? I might. I don't know. Yeah. So you were talking about motive. The Sodders were convinced that this was not, that their children had not died in the fire, that they had been kidnapped. What are the possible motivations for stealing these kids? We don't know much about the Sodders yet, do we?
Like a paedophilia. Why would you steal a kid?
The only Katie thing... is dead set.
You're into the paedophile line.
I don't want it to be my answer, but yeah. what the fuck else?
Trafficking. Yeah, you sort of... I get it.
These balls of fire, which I don't understand what that is, but we think it's a grenade, right? So where have you got that? Is it someone coming from war? Where's that brother at war? Is he still out pretending to be at war, even though the war's over?
Interesting. Okay.
Yeah, you start to question that.
Yeah.
So here's a little bit about George and Jenny Sodder. They had met in the United States, but they were both Italian immigrants. George had grown up in Sardinia, and he was universally regarded in his town as a very reputable member of the community. He had immigrated with his brother to the U.S. and had quickly found work on the railways and then had started his own business. But his brother, and this is another thing that trailed off. I was like, I need more information about that. His brother went through immigration with him, and then almost immediately after he went through immigration, moved back to Sardinia.
What?
And we don't know anything else about
him. He just wanted that blissful experience of U.S. immigration.
Yeah, well, I've done this now.
Wanted to take that box.
Maybe his brother was like, yeah, I've seen America. It's not so great.
Not into
it. I'm going back.
Yeah. Fair enough. I think we can all understand that.
Yeah.
I'd probably turn around. The airport's the best bit.
Okay. So there was something about George that put him in possible danger. So can you think of what was going on during the war in Italy that might have affected people's view
of an
George,
American,
of an Italian immigrant in an Italian community?
Well, because Italy was on the, you know, Italy wasn't loving America at that stage because they're on opposite sides. So that's kind of awkward, I suppose. Different sides of the war.
Very awkward.
So the Americans, what do they think? He's some sort of a fascist?
Well, in particular, he spoke against the leader of Italy, who was...
I look at Hannah. Come on, Hannah.
Yes. So obviously Mussolini split the country, but it's interesting because George and Jenny were living in an Italian community that were all pro-Mussolini. So he was very outspoken against him. Ooh. Yeah, go ahead, Katie. Katie had a question.
I was like, shit, wait, Mussolini steal the children?
He was a bad guy.
He was a bad guy.
How does he do it? So busy.
He just wants children? What?
Yeah. Well, and then I went down this whole rabbit hole of like, I don't know enough about Mussolini. And I found out that Sardinia in particular was like a key area because he promised, they had been fighting for independence and he promised millions of lira. I want to say lira.
It would have been lira. Lira. Yeah. Totally lira.
Yeah, which, I mean, in the end, they didn't see much of that money because it was all sort of pilfered and corrupt and all of that, but they were promised all of this. So it was kind of like God Sardinia were pulled in. Yeah. So people were very hesitant to speak out against him, except for George. So something happened.
So George was speaking out against him and then his children got stolen.
He had been speaking out against him for years.
And then suddenly his children go missing.
Well, not suddenly, because by this point, Mussolini had actually been assassinated, because he was assassinated in, I think, September of 1945.
And then what month is it?
Like 10 days before Hitler kills himself, Mussolini's assassinated. Okay, so 2 months before the fire, so this was in October 1945, a traveling life insurance salesman tried to sell George Sauter a policy. When Sauter declined, the salesman told him that his house would go up in smoke. Mm. And your children, are going to be destroyed.
Mm. That's a random threat, though. Like, why would you assume every door-to-door salesman wants to kill your family? Unless there's something else going on.
Well, the door-to-door salesman has specifically said that they are going to kill your family. That is one clue.
Still.
It's a very bold sales tactic, isn't it? I'm not sure they recommend that in sales school. If they say no at first, threaten to kill the kids.
Yeah. Like ABC, always be closing / threatening to kill the kids.
Would you like some health insurance? Oh, no, I'm all set. Well, you're going to get cancer tomorrow.
I have a quick question, actually, at this hiatus. Please, when he was all talking, shit-talking Mussolini, then was that when he was in America? Or was that before he went? Okay, so he was saying from afar.
The other thing that emerged is that everyone...
How brave is he? Was he shit-talking Mussolini to his face? Mm-hmm. Or was he motherfucking...
Well, the one thing that all the townspeople said about George is even though he was regarded as this upstanding citizen, he would never talk about his background. He would never speak about his life in Sardinia. He wouldn't talk about his brother.
Okay.
And he seemed very uncomfortable with this topic when it would come up.
What does that mean?
What does it mean?
Might mean he's scared that Mussolini's going to kill him.
That's,
to be fair.
That's what it means.
Or the insurance guy. Like, there was a lot going on for him.
Yeah. Maybe they're the same guy. Like,
oh, good. Only four of my kids have died. I'm fine.
Maybe the insurance guy was Santa. I mean, isn't he an insurance on all of our lives when you think about it?
Happiness insurance. Yeah.
So wise.
Just no one upset Hannah. She really believes in Santa.
What do you mean believes it? Of course I do. Weird.
So the month of the fire, some of the Sauter children later said that they had noticed two people in a car that would watch them on their way home from school.
Oh my God, like they're they planned it. Like the people watching the house for ages. Mm. That's so fucked up.
So basically the police and the fire department have buried this and they've said it was an accident. Your children died, but the Sauters are going, what do we do? Mm-hmm. We don't believe this. There's no evidence. What power do we have? And then later a woman who ran a hotel in Charleston claimed to have seen the children approximately a week afterwards. Her testimony said, I do not remember the exact date, but the children had come in around midnight with two men and two women, all of whom appeared to be of Italian extraction. When she attempted to speak with the children, one of the men looked at me in a hostile manner, turned around and began talking rapidly in Italian. Immediately, the whole party stopped talking to me.
Wow. Ooh. It was Mussolini. We're literally saying Mussolini took these kids. Mm.
But also, I was a waitress, and like some people are just dicks like that. You know? It's like, you're no matter what you, hi, what can I get you? And you're like, well, fuck my life.
And you can't assume all of them abducted kids.
I mean, I did. I reported a lot of shit.
You got fired in the end. You can't report all our customers to the police.
So what do the Sodders do next? What do you think? Like, what action would you take if this was happening?
I mean, I would just start shooting people.
Wow. Well, that is the American way, but...
I think maybe you hire some local gangsters to look into it. Oh, you, okay. You gave me a thumbs up there.
I was like, whoa.
Anna, whoa. It was along the right lines, yeah. You know, because the gangsters, the head of the mob.
You could hire gangsters, or you could hire...
Is it a billboard?
Yes.
Yeah, because I've seen something of this case before.
Okay, yeah.
To complete honesty, I saw the tweet. So, I saw the tweet where someone said, this is a good case, and I had a quick look
at it. Oh, maybe you can credit them with sending it.
Genuinely, I thought, this is too dark. So what we do is
and I'm really glad that I was like, this will be fun, let's do it. I couldn't help it. Yeah, that's the thing, is because there's this temptation to pick, lighter, fun cases. No, and then this one, I was like, oh, my God.
It's fascinating. It really is. This is true. So I saw a billboard on one of the pictures, so that's why I say billboard.
Yes, so they funded a billboard that was up for decades.
Wow.
Saying, have you seen these children? But also they hired a private investigator because basically the police force weren't doing them any good. C.C. Tinsley discovered...
CCTV. I thought, what, in 1945?
This was the first case. This private investigator discovers that the insurance salesman who had threatened George was actually a member of the coroner's jury that deemed the fire an accident.
What?
That's dodgy.
It's well dodgy. Yeah. But very little happens. I mean, this poor family, they write to the FBI. They get a letter from the director, J. Edgar Hoover.
Mm. Oh, Leonardo DiCaprio.
Yes, exactly.
Oh, well, that's nice.
Leonardo DiCaprio.
Everyone wants a letter from him.
Who basically says, although I would like to be of assistance, the matter related appears to be of local character and does not come within the investigative jurisdiction of this bureau. Then they hire another private investigator. What do you think happens?
Oh, does the second private investigator fall in love with the first and they run away together?
Oh, my gosh.
Then they're back down to zero.
Yeah.
Maybe.
Say it's true, Taylor. Don't ruin this for
Tell
us.
Tell us it's true. They run away to Lapland with Santa
Claus. And it's a hit series with Tom Selleck.
Something. This is so dark. Is there no lightness at all?
You guys have to supply the light. I'm given the dark. You supply the light. This is good. We'll all have fun. Okay. No, the private investigator disappears and is never heard from again.
As in might be killed.
Possibly.
Wow.
Or he took their money and just never...
Yeah.
Well, for fuck's sake.
Yeah.
I feel like they're dodgy characters, private investigators. Yeah. Mm.
So what are we thinking? We know the background. We know all of these details. What do you think the Sodder family's conclusion of this is? Who is behind all of this?
Wait, what? Who is the Sodder family? They're farmers? Have they done anything awful?
I think it was transport.
Do they have any enemies? Who would want to hurt their kids to spite them?
Well, if he works in transport...
Someone just trying to steal kids.
He works in transport... Someone who's quite famous for being good at transport was Mussolini, made all the trains run on time. He looked on Sodder Dad as a threat to his transport monopoly.
Ooh.
Had to bump off his kids. Or I think the Italian mafia is somewhere.
Hey, there we go.
She just gives an Italian accent.
I thought I was going to have to sing the Sopranos theme song. Oh. If we didn't get there. The Sodder family all believe that the Sicilian mafia behind the kidnapping as retribution for George speaking against Mussolini. Now, what's confusing about this to me is I went, was Mussolini pro-mafia? And my brain didn't know the answer to that. But actually, what I found out is that he spoke very publicly against the mafia and took action to take down the mafia. But I think it was a bit give with one hand, take with the other, please the people and say, I'm taking care of the mafia. But obviously there must have been big links there.
Mm-hmm.
Two-faced son of a bitch.
Yeah. So their theory is that maybe they did that to extort money from the Sodders. But the problem with that theory is that they've never been asked for money. Nobody ever asked for them.
They never paid for their kids to get back.
No. There's a huge hole in the theory, isn't it? If the whole point of kidnapping the kids is to get money and you've forgotten to ask for the money,
where
you're
is
a terrible gangster.
Yeah. Joey, did you...
Where's the money?
We have the kids. Oh, it's so much work. I mean, we gotta read to them at bedtime. They need new clothes, and we don't have any money because we didn't ask for it.
That's a great idea for like a movie, though, is people that like kidnap these kids and they're like, these kids are awful! Yeah. I hate them! I mean, copyright Hannah George, I'm writing that. That's a beauty.
Nice.
It's come up.
I mean, it's not based on this story because that would be a terrible Christmas story, but...
Could be. If they turn out to be perfect parents and everyone learns something about themselves by the end...
And they will. Okay.
There you go.
Interested.
You've got a plot.
So this case has been pored over by so many different people, and NPR did a whole segment about it, and the person who reported on it had concluded themselves, you know, actually lots of evidence has come out that the children's bodies could have burned in the fire, and this is just a family that's sort of grasping at straws, trying to find a conspiracy theory that something else had happened. There's only one surviving child from the fire who is the youngest.
Oh, wow.
But she basically promised to the family that she would keep this story going, that she would keep it active in the press, that she would encourage people to keep looking into it in the hopes that they could somehow crack it. So again, no pressure, guys.
But she's passed the baton on.
But it's down to
women.
Us right now. Wow. To figure out what happened. Here's what kills me is that there's so little stuff about this brother. It's like you went through immigration and then you went right back. What was going on there? Was your brother scared of boats?
Did so the brother speak against Mussolini as well? Or was it just George?
We don't know
about the brother.
So, I don't know.
So that he might have been a pro Mussolini or a gangster and he went back and told on his treacherous
bro. It could have been that. Yeah, it could have been that he sold him out. It could have been that George was in on this all along. I mean, who knows? Mm-hmm. What do we think? Hannah George.
Oh, man. I mean...
Bring it back to Santa.
Yeah,
like, whatever
I think what
you
it
do.
Was, it was a Christmas miracle. No, it wasn't. I mean, part of me kind of thinks that, like... It's probably like what sort of Kate says in a way is it's maybe better if they did die there and then because that means that nothing more sinister happened to them. So maybe it's good that that happened. This has got dark. Okay.
No, I know what you mean. It's sort of, it's that thing of, although the picture he saw of his daughter, she was a very successful ballerina in New York. So okay.
No there's way.
There's a different movie.
Things turned out okay.
Right. Oh, we need to know for definite. You can't just go like, that could be your daughter. Fucking, is that my daughter or not? Mm. What am I supposed to feel about this fucking picture?
I know.
And it's hard to tell if you're a ballerina.
And getting the photo in the mail, again, is somebody just messing with you? And
that's
they were convinced.
Like
they said this resembles him so much.
Twitter.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, if this happened now, it would be such a different...
It wouldn't. It would just be Twitter, normal Twitter.
Lots
and
of photos on Twitter.
And this is why Anna, famously, is not on Twitter.
I'd keep getting photos of children on Twitter. I don't know what to do with that. Don't know where to file those. I think for me, it's really the ladder that says it was not an accident.
Right.
Surely.
Oh, interesting.
I'm with you.
Why has someone chucked that in a ravine?
Why would you do that? Yeah.
Yeah. So I think it probably is. And Mussolini was quite a vengeful character.
Yes.
And the mafia loves, you know, kidnapping people.
That stands up.
There we go. I can see I've got you on side.
I'm on side.
I don't know how good your judgment is right now.
Katie called it halfway through. She's like, Mussolini took these children.
Yeah. My judgment is flawed, but I'm still good at judging.
Nice. Well, I think that's proved your point.
Thank you. I can't imagine the anguish of going through this as a family, but I think if what those kids promised... to their parents, to their grandchildren, that they would keep this case alive, that the best we can do is keep talking about it and speculating because it's a question of questioning authority and not taking necessarily what they give you for the truth. What I'm saying is, fuck the police.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah.
Drunk women solving crime.
So this is a very short but chock full little anecdote we got. It says, well, When I was younger, I was a hostage in a bank raid and made a veil.
What?
Yeah, I always start my sentences with a bank raid with like, well.
This was from a live show, right? Somebody wrote
this
it on
was
the
from a live show, and we've held on to this for so long. I'm like, we haven't done this one yet. Because this is amazing. It says, the gang had machetes and the men hid under the table, leaving my 17-year-old self standing up next to the guy guarding the door as his friends cut a hole in the ceiling. And his last line is, all very interesting. But he didn't even write very, it's like V, full stop.
V interesting
wow. Day.
Yeah, I all have around. Young people.
So many questions. Mm. And I tried to find this case. I was Googling like Maidaville bank raids and I couldn't find it, which doesn't mean that there was no press about it. But wow.
Amazing.
I mean, when I was 17, I crossed the state line. It was pretty exciting.
It's a dangerous game in itself.
It is a
well
dangerous
done.
Game. I mean, first of all, a bank raid in Maidaville.
Yeah.
Just automatically sounds pretty exciting.
It's pretty cool. It's like kind of Richard Curtis style bank raid. It's not like shit.
Yeah.
Like,
there's a horny American in the corner.
Do you ever sort of like sometimes when you're in the queue at like a bank or something, you're like, if someone came in now, I know what I'd do. I'd be so rad. If this is a hostage situation, I'd be like, poof, poof, poof. And I know that I
with
wouldn't.
With your
I'd
lack of gun. Yeah.
You just
I
make
would
those
just make
noises.
The noises.
They were the noises for my
pew,
like, for
pew,
my fish.
Pew, pew, pew. Oh, she's got a laser gun. Pew, pew.
I always do imagine in Zero. Any situation. I've never been in one of those really high octane situations. And I always imagine I'll be a fucking hero. But
you would be a fucking hero, man. Hannah George.
Let's hope we never get in a bank raid together.
I always imagine I'd talk them out of it.
Oh, nice.
You go for the guns. I go for the tongues. Yeah. but not in that way. The tongue's like a talking
totally
tongue.
Got it.
Yeah.
Yeah, thank no, you. Yeah, talking tongue. What other kind of tongue is there? I'm married. I don't know.
I like it.
Everyone can be brought to reason.
How do you think you talk about it?
Yeah, what would be your strategy?
Oh, you just go, maybe you start with a little hug, although I don't really like hugging. And then you say, are you all right? Look, we won't tell anyone about this.
Nice.
Do you want to go for a drink? Do you want to go for a drink? No one says no to that.
Oh, wow.
If they're a terrorist.
Not even terrorists say
how
no to a
awkward
drink.
Is that drink? So I'm buying, but what do you talk about?
What are you into? What are you? What films did you see lately? That kind of thing.
You know, I do a podcast. I don't know if you listen to it. No such fists.
There's such fists in a thing. You should listen. Yeah.
I mean, okay, it's Maidaville. There's machetes. Like, this is a Notting Hill gang. Wow, that's a hell of a thing to go through when you're 17 years old. Thank you for sharing that.
But what an anecdote
in
to have.
Such a blasé. Yeah. I know, like...
You're the coolest guy among your friends.
I know. Anna, you have solved that.
Yeah. Why?
Yeah.
Oh, crap.
I mean, at least in retrospect,
here's what you should have said.
Anna, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank
today.
You. So much fun.
Anna, is there anything that you would like to tell us about? What are you up to? Is there anything you'd like to plug?
Oh, yeah. Good question. We are going on tour in Europe. Ooh. So if you're in Europe, you should go. Yeah. End of May, we'll be talking about weird, wacky facts and doing work in progress tomorrow, which will be a couple of weeks ago by the time you hear this, so don't try and book tickets for that. But yeah, full of weird facts and mad, stupid puns and
amazing.
Jokes.
Amazing. Where should we find that. You, Anna?
Go to nosuchthingasafish.com.
Okay.
And book tickets for that or buy our book that we're going to write by the end of the year.
Amazing. Yeah. Oh my gosh. Thank you so much for being with us. We've been Drunk Women Solving Crime.
Yay! Yeah.
And I mean, we haven't made it worse.
We haven't made it worse.
Drunk Women Solving Crime is produced by Amanda Redman with music by The Lion and the Wolf. You can follow us on Twitter at Drunk Women Pod and on Facebook and Instagram at Drunk Women Solving Crime. And please review us on Apple Podcasts. Also, if you've got a petty crime you want us to solve, then please write it in that review and we'll solve it. Thank you so much to Acast for hosting us, and thank you for listening.
You've heard the podcast, now buy the merch. There's a full range of certified organic cotton t-shirts, jumpers and hoodies, all on the website. Just go to drunkwomensolvingcrime.com.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.